In a story-sharing event that many of us attended last Monday night, there was a funny moment when Margie, who was sharing her story with us, spoke of having been conscientized back in the 1980s. And then she realized with a little embarrassment that perhaps she was dating herself because nobody uses that word anymore. And several people quickly pointed out to her that the idea still exists. It's only the terminology that has changed. Nowadays, people talk of being woke. If that term is completely new to you, then yes, you probably are dating yourself. I think it comes from I woke up. And it means having our eyes open to the truth or having our conscience awakened so that we are woke. And it's used as a badge of honour by inner-city greenie types and as a sarcastic put-down by right-wing politicians and commentators who regard it as all too politically correct by far. A few months ago, Barack Obama said something about woke culture that came back to my mind as I read and reflected on the first part of tonight's gospel reading. Maybe you didn't hear it, so here it is.
But I do get a sense sometimes now among certain young people, and this is accelerated by social media, there is this sense sometimes of the way of me making change is to be as judgmental as possible about other people. And that's enough. Like if I tweet or hashtag about how you didn't do something right or used the word wrong verb or then I can sit back and feel pretty good about myself because, man, you see how woke I was? I called you out. Let me get on TV. Watch my show. Watch Grownish. That's not activism. That's not bringing about change. You know, if all you're doing is casting stones, you're probably not going to get that far. That's easy to do.
Now, why I remembered that when I was reflecting on the first part of tonight's gospel reading may not be terribly obvious, so let me unpack it a little. Thank you, Leon. Jesus tells a story of a situation after an exorcism. He describes an unclean or demonic spirit that has been expelled from someone and goes off looking for a new home, but it can't find one. So it decides to go back where it came from. And returning, it finds that the person is now like a house that has been all tidied up and nicely renovated. An even more attractive home than ever before. So the spirit calls up a bunch of its friends and they all move in together. And the final state of the person, Jesus says, is worse than before the exorcism. Now, Jesus could just be describing reality here, but when he finishes, he adds this comment. So will it be also with this evil generation. This suggests that it's actually something of a parable. He's not so much talking literally about individuals and exorcism. He's using it as an illustration or parable of a bigger reality, a reality facing the culture of a whole generation. And that's where it seems to me to be saying something very similar to the point that Barack Obama was making in that clip. I'm struck by the fact that there's even an overlap in terminology. Because in today's woke culture, we talk about calling out bad behaviour or toxic attitudes and ideas. And in the older language of exorcism, demons were called out or cast out or expelled from people. I'm wondering whether what we think we are doing is actually a lot more similar than we would have imagined. So what Jesus is saying and what Barack Obama is picking up on is that it is not enough to just focus on purging the things that we are opposed to. As Barack Obama says, the rise of social media has hugely inflated this tendency to think that we are contributing to a better world if we just sit back in our lounge rooms and fire off a few angry tweets calling out bad behaviour and bad attitudes, among others. It makes us feel terribly virtuous and woke, because obviously we are so much better than those terrible people with their dinosaur attitudes and their toxic behaviours and their tone-deaf sense of entitlement. But, says Jesus, however virtuous it might make you feel, it's not actually producing a harvest of goodness in you or around you. And as Barack Obama adds, the kind of activism that changes the world for the better does not consist in being as judgmental as possible about other people. Now, it would be easy to stop here with the consequences for the judgmental individual, but Jesus doesn't stop there. Jesus says that this is about a whole generation, and I don't think he just means individual by individual. It's a cultural issue, not just some misguided ideas among certain individuals. The last state of that person is worse than the first, so it will be for this evil generation. Do you see how the dynamic that Jesus describes works? The demonic spirit can get back in and bring its nasty mates with it because it finds the house unoccupied. Something evil was called out and expelled, but nothing positive and good has moved in its place. So what was left was a vacancy, a vacuum, an emptiness that was soon filled by even more toxicity than had been there before. Can you see how that dynamic is being replicated in what Barack Obama is identifying about our woke generation? We've become experts at identifying and calling out bad behaviours and attitudes. We're on a constant crusade to purge our world of every remnant trace of outmoded and toxic ways of thinking. But what are we replacing it with? If all that is moving in its place is anger and judgmentalness and self-righteousness, then Jesus clearly was talking about us, because the final state is indeed manifestly worse than the first. In many ways, our generation is becoming a more and more extreme example of this phenomenon. On the positive side, no previous generation has been as sensitive to the feelings and rights of vulnerable minorities and the victims of past wrongs. We've become extremely sensitive to racism and sexism and colonialism and homophobia and all manner of patronising. We have become better and better of thinking about how words and actions might come across to the victims of abuse, or to sexual minorities, or to people with disabilities, or to those from diverse cultural and language backgrounds. And all of this could suggest that we are on the cusp of a wonderful new age of peace and harmony and understanding. But we are simultaneously living in a world that seems more dangerously divided than ever. From our political leaders down, all capacity to accept one another's differences and work together cooperatively across our tribal boundaries seems to be going up in smoke. Even in our churches, we are increasingly divided between conservatives and liberals, and the battle seems intent on destroying any middle ground and driving everyone into one camp or the other, and then lining them all up on opposing battlefronts to angrily call one another out for every perceived error. we have become the masters of righteous hostility and calling out our chosen evils of every stripe and colour. But the more we do it, the more vacuous we become. Because we've purged and purged and purged, but we've been too stubborn or proud or stupid to drink deeply from the love and mercy of God and to fill our houses, our hearts, our culture so full of love and mercy that there is not the faintest possibility that any of those nasty spirits are going to find a way back in. The faith and life of the followers of Jesus was never intended to just be about opposing things and rejecting things and abstaining from things. It is much more about what we are to embrace and to fill our lives with. The Apostle Paul, as we heard, urges us to seek spiritual gifts and above all, those that build up the church. Faith, hope, and love, above all, love. When these things fill our lives, the negative things will be squeezed out without any need of angry shouting or divisive finger pointing. I want to comment on a connection between this first section of our gospel reading and what follows it, because it does sound like a change of subject, and in many ways it is, but the gospel writers often arrange their changes of subject so that one story sheds light on the next. In this gospel, Matthew moves from this parable of the post-exorcism reoccupation to the story of Jesus' family trying to contact him and him instead identifying all who do the will of God as his true family. And then after a quick handful of parables that we skipped tonight, we hear of his rejection in his hometown. Is there a connection between this parable and the family and hometown dynamic? Maybe not a big one, but I think it does alert us again to the dangers of tribalism. Because much of our wokeness or our anti-wokeness, depending on which side we're on, becomes little better than an expression of solidarity with our tribe, our family, our party. We call out the offences that our tribe has chosen to hate. Well, over there, they're calling out the offences that their tribe's chosen to hate. This can be especially true in our churches where, despite this example from Jesus, family often becomes an idolatry. We even had a Christian political party that called itself Family First, which is a label that should actually sound as unchristian as America First to the followers of one who taught us to always put others first. Fierce loyalty to our family, our nation, our tribe, easily and often becomes a kind of counterfeit piety by which we align ourselves with one local set of values and against another, and then start calling one another out across these artificial lines. Once again, we have defined ourselves by what we are opposed to, but left a vacuum inside that quickly fills with toxic spirits of hostility and bitterness and judgmentalism. What Jesus calls us to is a new life and a new community that is grounded not in the evils we oppose, but in the love, joy, mercy, hope, and faith that we embrace. And one of the positives of what he says about the new family is that it is a family. Like the exorcism parable, this is not about individuals. We are not called to be heroic Lone Ranger Christians. We're called into a new community, a community full of all sorts of unlikely companions, from woke vegans with ambiguous pronouns to coal mining executives who sprinkle petroleum byproducts on their breakfast cereal. In the new community, We are all called to reach hands of friendship across these old tribal lines and to learn to love and respect one another and build a new culture so full to bursting with love and grace and mutual care that the banished spirits will have to just keep on searching.